Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's June the 14th, 2006. I'm Tom Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all the day's agricultural news, including ideas the European Union may be softening on the WTO negotiations. Tough talk from the NFU, claiming U.S. farmers simply cannot afford one more, quote, free trade agreement. And from Decatur, Paris, and Frankfurt, ADM says it plans to double investment in the biofuels industry over the next few years. Also, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That'll happen just after the bottom of the hour. And along the way today, we'll hear all kinds of news about the Western corn rootworm and how many eggs it might lay in the future. It gets a little scary as the environment fills up with more CO2 and ozone. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. July wheat futures down 10.5 cents today at 461. That actually in Kansas City. July futures in Chicago at 361 and a quarter were off 8.5 cents. September futures at 377 and three quarters for the soft red winter wheat down 9 and a quarter today. July corn futures off 6 and a quarter at 237. September's at 249 were down 6. And December futures at 262 and a quarter. We're off 6.5 cents. The March corn at 273.5 for next year, off 6.5 cents as well. July soybean futures, 589.5 down 6.25. The August down 6 at 596.5. And September's at 603, we're down 6.75. November beans, 618 down 6.5 cents. Bean meal futures, July contract 179.20 down 220. July bean oil at 24.77, we're off 20 for the day. From the Mercantile Exchange, August feeder cattle at $109.42, we're up 62.5 cents. June live cattle at $78.22, we're up 17.5. And June lean hogs at $74.70 a hundredweight were down 40 cents for the day. The outside markets, crude oil trading the July at $69.10 a barrel, off, or rather up 54 cents at this hour. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 10,763, up 56 points for the day. And July gold at $564.10 are now down 20 cents.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about this marketplace and what you made of the trade for the day.
Turned the computer on and did get my weather forecast, and they said it was a little kinder weather forecast. The market basically did see some divergence in the outside markets. I understand gold and silver are trading lower, but they were trading higher during the session. We did see the stock market rebound. So it looks like to me that there is still a major problem with this higher interest rates slowing and the getting out of equity stocks and also some commodities. And we definitely today we saw the little commodity trader jump out the window on long positions, particularly in corn. And tomorrow morning we will see Sparks at 7 a.m. come out with their Informa group with their guest estimate of the planning intentions report. All I can say is that, and also during the noon hour, we did see a slight increase in some of the rainfall eastern part of the Midwest, and everybody will be looking to see if the maps verify tonight.
You know, you like to say the trend is your friend. Which direction are you calling the market at the point?
Or, well, the trend is down, and it's down in corn, soybeans, and wheat. And, you know, as a direct result, you know, the trend is unmistakable. And a lot of the pressure can be as a result of the weakness in the stock market and weaknesses in the major sell-offs in gold and silver. And, you know, it's obviously these big hedge fund, these big fund traders play all markets. And that's been brought to our attention here particularly. But today the small trader did liquidate a lot of corn. And
I do want to ask you about that, because all week long as we watch this marketplace drop on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, that it's said to be on low volume. I assume we'll make the assumption that that's the small trader jumping out of the marketplace, and more so today than apparently earlier than a week. But the big players really haven't. Have they changed their positions, or have they just not been playing in the marketplace and holding?
Well, you know, I think step backwards and then we'll go step forwards.
Okay.
You know, step backwards is the federal, you know, Bernanke is definitely jawboning this inflation. This the CPI numbers today were very inflationary. And there is a general bet that in order to save face, even with the economy slowing down, he will raise interest rates probably a quarter of a point. You know, a lot of the market people don't feel it's a percentage point higher at some point in time in the next 3 months or 4 months, but it's going to be gradual, and the stock market doesn't have a lot of room on the downside that it needs to go, but there's some sell-off. In putting this into market perspective, you know, the speculators have been getting out because the higher interest rates have hurt it, and I think the International Monetary Fund has pushed, you know, other leading growth economies like India, China, to slow down as well. And inflation does hurt those growth economies. So I think that is a factor, and people are liquidating these commodity positions and stock positions as a fear of higher interest rates and further slowdown in the economy. And I think that the, you know, massive amounts of money are going into fixed market.
That was my next question. Do they pull out and do they put it in something that ties it up for 12 months? And do we not have to worry about that money coming back?
That's my impression, that we are seeing it go into like fixed interest rates type of thing, waiting on maybe a higher interest rates to come. And they're not sure how the new Federal Reserve chairman will play this game. Of course, you know, he is concerned with these statistics coming out because they're very inflationary. And it is going to be interesting to also see, you know, we do know the western growing areas are extremely dry. We harp on this idea that Des Moines, Iowa, is the driest on record for the month of May. And, you know, if we do get a quarter to a half inch, is that a real cure-all for that big corn-growing area to the west? But we do see people basically very complacent with the idea that things are going to be very normal. We've got a lot of corn planted, and we should take advantage of these higher prices. You know, the big thing is careful. We still have basically close to $70 a barrel crude oil. We do still have a tremendous demand network. But as I say, the trend is down, and it is scaring all longs out of the marketplace.
One final question, and we're short on time. I just want to double-check and see what you think. I know there's a lot of outside money. If they're locking some of that up, could we be going into a less volatile, even through the summer months, could it be less volatile maybe than we thought it might be because that money's locked up somewhere else?
Yeah, that's interesting. My impression is that if we even get the closest indication of a crop reduction, you know, let's say 2 to 3 bushels under the 150 bushel benchmark that we're looking at, you'll see a very explosive commodity market this summer. And stay tuned because we'll know in another 30, 45 days how it'll play.
We appreciate you being with us today,
Thank
Paul.
Thank you very much.
And Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with meteorologist Drew Lerner. Our own Ed Kieser says tonight in the north and central section of the two-state region will be partly cloudy. There'll be a few widely scattered showers, some thunderstorms during the evening hours. In the south, partly cloudy, lows from 54 in northeastern Indiana to 64 in west central Illinois. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs from 76 near Lake Michigan to around 90 in southwestern Illinois. Dave Dickey will be here in just a couple of moments to take a look at today's agricultural news. I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report.
In agricultural news, the U.S. Trade Representative says the European Union may offer new concessions to market access in the Doha round. Susan Schwab says there have been, in her words, a number of signals from the European Union that they are looking at improvements to their offer. Meanwhile, National Farmers Union President Tom Bias says the U.S. can talk the talk, but will it walk the walk?
Since I've been about knee-high, I've always been hearing that we're one trade agreement away from prosperity, and we never seem to get there. And I think the message is just level with farmers. We don't need this promises that can't be met. We need real solutions out here, and as long as we're going down this road to free trade agenda, that negotiations has to include all the factors of trade, and it certainly doesn't right now. There's no better example than look what's happened to the ag trade surplus over the last 15 years since we began the free trade agenda. American farmers have been the real losers.
Schwab says U.S. leaders will fly to Geneva later this month for new high-level WTO meetings. Archer Daniels Midland officials say the company will double its capital spending on new ethanol and biodiesel plants over the next few years, investing between $3.5 and $4 billion. ADM officials say that ethanol profits will be robust even if oil drops below $70 a barrel. ADM currently has 25% of the market share for U.S. ethanol. USDA Ag Secretary Mike Johanns has unveiled an online energy estimator for irrigation. National Resources Conservation Chief Bruce Knight says the new web-based tool will arm farmers and ranchers with the information they need to make smart decisions that conserve water and therefore energy.
For anybody who's ever carried a pail of water, you know how heavy water is? Well, that also means it's very energy intensive to move it. Whether you're pumping it from deep water wells or you're moving it out of a canal for irrigation in your field, it takes a lot of energy. And so we've built an online estimator where a farmer can go to the USDA website and be able to do, with a few clicks of the mouse, an on-farm example for their operation that'll show the energy savings with changes in irrigation practices, changes in scheduling, those sorts of things.
According to Knight, more than 55 million acres of agricultural land are irrigated nationwide. Japanese newspapers are reporting today that U.S. and Japan officials will meet as early as next week to hammer out procedural details for resumption of U.S. beef trade. Public comment meetings in Japan to discuss the issue with consumers wrapped up today. And the CEO of the National Corn Growers Association says he's frustrated with development of E85 gasoline stations for flex vehicles. Rick Tolman says a recent trip from St. Louis to Chicago to St. Paul, Minnesota, gave him a firsthand look at gassing up on E85.
The first day was a little bit ugly. I found that E85 in St. Louis was priced very, very high. It was about 30 cents a gallon more expensive than regular unleaded, and I was quite surprised. I drove on towards Chicago and had picked out another station to stop at that I'd seen on the website, and very nice station, well marked right off the interstate, but found out I couldn't access it unless I had a fleet card. The silver lining was that I had a flex fuel vehicle, so I went and found some E10 and filled up there. But the first day was a little frustrating. So that's the ugly part of the experience. The second day, I was driving from Chicago over here to St. Paul, and it just worked out beautifully. I found a really nice station in Janesville, Wisconsin, that actually had 8 E85 pumps. E85 was 40 cents a gallon under regular unleaded. And then I filled up in St. Paul, and it was 60 cents a gallon under regular unleaded.
There is a website to assist consumers. It's e85fuel.com. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, in recent weeks, you've likely heard about an experiment on the East Coast that shows in the future poison ivy will grow bigger and become more poisonous. That's all well and good, but as you'll hear, the elevated carbon dioxide levels of the future may have a far greater impact right here in the heart of corn-growing country. There are rings in the cornfields, crop circles, if you will, just south of the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. The rings are filled with enough CO2 and O3, carbon dioxide and ozone, to simulate expected environmental conditions in the year 2050. A U of I entomologist Mike Gray says one of the experiments here shows insects, like the western corn rootworm, will thrive. This bug costs corn farmers millions of dollars a year to treat, and Gray says it looks like it will only get worse in the future.
This particular project, where we were looking specifically at western corn rootworm egg-laying by the variant western corn rootworm, the strain that has adapted to crop rotation, we wanted to see specifically if this variant would change its egg-laying behavior in plots, in soybean plots, that had elevated CO2, elevated ozone. So Jared spent a lot of time in these replicated plots taking soil samples, removing the eggs from the soil during the winter, and then determining if, in fact, any change had taken place in egg-laying or no change had taken place. And what he found was quite surprising.
The he is University of Illinois research specialist Jared Schroeder.
The interesting thing that we found was within the rings there was no difference within adult densities, but beyond that, the egg densities were significantly different. Within elevated CO2 plots, we found twice as many eggs as we did in plots that weren't in elevated CO2. And then even further beyond that, in plots that were elevated with CO2 and O3, we found three times as many eggs as if we would have been in a normal plot.
So big deal. You might say to yourself, the western corn rootworm could lay 2 to 3 times as many eggs in about 4 decades from now. It is, especially because that egg laying will increase gradually each and every year from now until then.
Now, there are some who might say, well, you know, that's 40 plus years away. Why should we be concerned? Well, again, what we find interesting is the fact that we are likely seeing increases in egg laying every year in response to these elevated gas concentrations that are going up every year. So with the, overall economic importance of western corn rootworms, we look ahead and have to, I guess, scratch our head and say, this is clearly an insect that as we see changing global atmospheric conditions with regard to these gases, we might anticipate greater pressure, more egg laying by this variant western corn rootworm.
It is called the variant western corn rootworm because the insect has already adapted to another environmental condition, the crop rotation that was used to control it for more than a quarter of a century. Farmers will not be happy to hear their battle with the western corn rootworm may only intensify as time passes. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Joining us now on this Wednesday afternoon is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, to take a look at today's cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Farmers starting to catch up in your area or not?
Yeah, they finally are catching up. They're still doing replant. We've had to replant some replant, and I'd say maybe we've still got maybe 10% of the beans to go, but that's some stuff looks pretty scraggly and other stuff looks pretty good, so we're finally catching up a little bit, but still a tad behind.
And the corn crop, is it up and even or fairly uneven in your area?
It's a little bit uneven. Some is just probably 5-6 inches tall and just didn't get off to a very good start. Now, the corn that was planted early seems to look the best. You know, we've got some corn that's knee-high and it looks real good, but some of the beans still haven't come through yet. There still may be some replants. So, you know, it's just not the ideal conditions here in Indiana.
How are train values to the southwest holding up, or southeast, I'm sorry?
Train values are holding up pretty well. The basis had hardly changed at all the last 10 days until today, and train values are a couple cents better. So just a little improvement. The sell-off we've had the last couple of days will probably totally dry up any farmer selling, so the basis levels could get better.
And what do you make of the last several days of this marketplace with the drop?
Well, you know, the bull market needs to be fed. There's not been a lot of news out there. Now they're calling for a little bit more rain than what anybody had thought, so it was not a very good sell-off. And you got to remember, the funds were just, they were long shot, a little under 250,000 contracts, so if they decide to really liquidate, we may not have seen the downslide be done with yet.
And are you satisfied that this is simply a weather-driven market at this point, or is there something else that might be influential?
Well, of course, inflation is driving it, too. The metals crashed and burned yesterday, and, of course, crude oil was down almost $2 a gallon or barrel. So we were lucky the grains didn't get hurt yesterday any worse than they did, so they played a little catch-up today. So it's inflation and weather and just a buying frenzy or a selling frenzy. There's just a lot of money to be playing around in this market.
Are you on average at the elevator ahead of schedule for purchases on corn and beans from your area compared to last year and to previous years?
Yes, most of it was done here. You know, when we first started this rally after the planting intentions came out, and we're about 200% ahead of last year, but since we've had this sell-off, it's virtually totally stopped. We've hardly booked any new crop here for a couple weeks.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn's 217, beans 566, and cash wheat's 303.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Todd.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Wednesday afternoons. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner about the weather. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. A young Terre Haute, Indiana boy was killed and his brother stabbed after their father allegedly abducted them. 32-year-old Katron Walker allegedly stabbed his sons, aged 2 and 4, grabbed his sons, ages 2 and 4, from their grandfather's backyard at knife point yesterday morning. Walker is charged with murder and attempted murder. A state agriculture official says the first sighting of the tree-killing emerald ash borer in Illinois is prompting better communications between officials at all levels of government and with the public as well. Ag Department Natural Resources Manager Warren Ghosh says coordinated efforts between different governmental units has been key to quarantines in other states on wood that can carry the emerald ash borer, and he expects more of the same in Illinois. The beetle had been found in 3 neighboring states before it was discovered recently in Kane County, just west of Chicago. A Champaign startup company has been hired by the federal EPA to design a cost-effective home lead test. Zheng Lu, a chemist for DesignTech, says the test uses nanotechnology and produces much fewer false positive results than current testing procedures. He says they hope to have a home lead testing kit on the market in 2 or 3 years. Indiana native Ron Gettelfinger has been elected to a second term as president of the United Auto Workers Union. The 61-year-old Gettelfinger ran unopposed as the 1,400 delegates in Las Vegas chose him during a 4-day convention. He faces turbulent times and difficult decisions as U.S. automakers continue to reduce their workforces and drive down union membership. Shares of Verisun Energy, the nation's second-largest ethanol producer, have jumped more than 29% in their trading debut today. Eventine Renewable Energy Holdings of Pekin, Illinois, is another ethanol producer that's planning to go public soon. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather here in the Midwest to start with, please.
Well, it looks like we've got another storm system that will work its way across the majority of the region here in the next few days, and we'll probably look at good coverage of rain amounts probably running a half inch to an inch in many areas, something locally greater in several areas. The precipitation should be distributed well enough that we'll see a brief period of improved topsoil moisture. And it looks like it doesn't come with a great deal of cooler air. It's just going to cool down a little bit as the humidity increases. But outside of that, we should be looking at seasonable temperatures across the region. A lot of 80 and 90-degree temperatures expected. Most of those 90s, those middle and high 90s, will be confined to the westernmost parts of the Corn Belt. But everybody in the eastern belt will finally see a little bit of a warm-up after some 70-degree days this week. And I think the bottom line is it's a pretty good environment for crop development in just about all of the belt.
Last week you told us a little bit about, as you looked into the future, about potential for dry weather across the Midwest. Joe Prasaki, who's the state statistician at Iowa, yesterday telling us that for the past 6 weeks, Iowa, or at least parts of it, have gotten less than average rainfall. Have your perceptions for drier weather in the future changed much since last week?
No, they have not. The key will be the next 2 or 3 weeks we'll be able to determine whether we're going to continue following the trend that we've been on here. We have a trend model that we run at this office on a regular basis, and that trend model has done exceptionally well up to this point in time, suggesting that we would see timely rainfall. We would not have any persistent hot, dry weather that would create big issues. But it does also suggest that as we go into the last days of June and early July, we will go through a transitional phase, and we should see a lot more ridginess in the atmosphere, high-pressure ridge dominating a larger portion of the Midwest, especially the western Corn Belt. And because of that, we should see less precipitation continue and an opportunity for warmer temperatures to take full advantage of the below-average precipitation bias, and that's what's going to possibly lead us into some trouble later this season.
The United States Department of Agriculture and the last World Agricultural and Supply and Demand Estimate Report, WASDE, from last week tells us that their expectations for the Chinese corn crop is that it will be bigger than at previous years and certainly than it had previously estimated this year. Is it off to a good start, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's pretty tenuous right now, and I think that those predictions may be in jeopardy. There's a large portion of China that has not done well with rainfall here in the last few weeks. East-central portions of the country have seen almost 3 weeks with less than a half inch of rainfall, and temperatures have been often in the 90s, so we're losing the ability to sustain the dry land crop across those areas of east central China. In the meantime, the far northeast, where about half of the soybean crop is produced, has also been suffering from some dryness. The situation up there is about to change, though. The next 2 or 3 days, we should see scattered showers and thunderstorms. But just like here in the States, it does not look like the rain amounts themselves are going to be all that impressive. So temporary improvement in topsoil moisture, but the long-term moisture supply situation is not likely to change dramatically, and that could leave them in a position to experience greater stress later on down the road. So in answer to your question, I would certainly not be necessarily convinced that they're going to produce this big corn crop, that we may actually see enough problems in China that crop will have to be reduced at least somewhat.
And finally, touch on the breadbasket of the CIS, the former Soviet states, the Ukraine. Wheat crop there is up, and it takes them quite a while to get through the harvest season, but they should be approaching that. How's it fared for the season?
It does look like it'll be a favorable environment for them. We have some timely rain still moving across that portion of the region. Most of the harvesting will really kick in as we go into mid-July and on into early August, and so that leaves us plenty of time for this crop to go ahead and mature itself to a good finish, and then hopefully we'll get some drier weather at that point, and I think that that will be exactly the scenario. That crop, of course, was hurt badly by the drought that occurred last autumn. I think we're looking at a fairly good weather environment right now to finish out that crop, but we've obviously lost a tremendous amount of production potential because of the dryness last fall. And in the eastern portions of what we call the Newlands region of the CIS, there's a large spring wheat crop that is produced there along with sunseed, and those crops have been a little bit stressed here recently by some drier than usual conditions and warmer than usual weather. That is going to prevail for a little while longer, but it looks like in the second week of the two-week forecast we'll bring some timely showers there and take some of that stress away for that crop.
Drew, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, and have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets. And don't forget, you can listen to today's futures analysis, the cash grain reports, and the weather right there on our website at WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason.